Welcome into the Humanity Effect. Thank you so much for listening in. Thank you so much for sharing. Thank you so much for subjects and just giving me feedback. I mean, it all goes to a very good place, I assure you. So I do appreciate you all. As you know, we are on Instagram. It is the_humanity_effect. And, you know, I don't waste time. I like to get right down to it. So today we have a special guest coming from all the way from Ethiopia that is joining us this evening. And I am really, very excited. As you guys know, this month is all about women's health. We're just going over everything from little girls to women, just some of the issues that we face. Opportunity yesterday to listen into that podcast, I talked about just frequencies and vibrations and how important it is, because as women, all of creation comes through us. And so where we are emotionally, spiritually, financially, it's going to matter, because essentially we are raising the next generation of human beings. So without further ado, let me go ahead and introduce my guest. Janelle, are you with us?
Yes, I am. Hello. How are you?
Good. You gotta say that long. Hello.
Yes, I'm here. Oh my gosh, how are you? Thank you so much for having me on your show. I really appreciate the invitation.
Absolutely, and thank you so much for being here. I mean, when I put this session together for this month, like I told you, you know, you came to mind, because when I think about strength, when I think about empowerment, when I think about being brave, your story comes to my mind, and I thought, then, you know, technology has allowed us to do that, then we definitely need to get you on here and share with your journey. So, Janelle, well, cheers.
Yes.
Each other. But to just tell us, actually born.
Okay, well, yes, I am a first generation American. I was born in Pennsylvania, grew up in Miami, Florida, and basically, just grew up like everybody else, you know, with just more of a multicultural background, with family, relocating from the islands, from the Caribbean, into the United States, and kind of just feeling, you know, our way around in terms of like assimilating into American culture, but definitely with a strong Caribbean background, especially in like, you know, Pan-Africanism and roots reggae and kind of like ideologies around Africa.
Right, we have you back.
Yes. Okay, so where were we back?
We were just talking about the fact this month we're acknowledging women's strength, health, and like I said, I know that you and I have known each other for a good while now. And I was going to let you just start talking about yourself a little bit. Just tell us, you know, what I find very interesting about your story is where you're actually from, where you were born. And now you live in, I just wanted to make sure, you live in Ethiopia. But I want to say at one point you were in Ghana, if that's correct.
No, I've been in Ethiopia the entire time that I've been. I've been living abroad, so I moved abroad back in 2011. I'm originally from Miami. Well, that's where I grew up. I was born in Pennsylvania, but I'm first generation Jamaican. My first generation American, but my parents are originally from Jamaica. And so I was from that background and growing up, you know, in South Florida, which has a strong West Indian and Caribbean community.
Absolutely. And that's where we met.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So, and then, you know, about 2011, I relocated and, or what we would call repatriated, to Ethiopia. And I currently live in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia.
That's the capital, correct?
Yeah, right. That's the capital. And I did spend like an extended stay. I didn't live there, but I did spend some extended time in Kenya.
Okay.
And so, yeah, so I was kind of not in Ethiopia for like maybe about 4 months of the 9 years that I've been here.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, that was the only time that I wasn't actually residing in Ethiopia. And that was back in 2013. But yeah, you know, I've just been living here and raising my family. When I moved,
tell us a little bit. So you have how many kids? What are their ages?
Well, I have four. Okay. My oldest is 21.
Oh my goodness. My second oldest.
You know, time doesn't wait for anyone.
is that QC? Am I thinking somebody
That's QC-la. It's QC-la.
Oh my gosh. 21?
Yes, 21 years old.
Okay, so QC-la, and he lives there.
He's back in Miami. He's back in Miami. Of course, my older two children, who at the time were 11 and 10 years old when we moved to Ethiopia. And when he was about 17, we decided that would be a good decision for him to go back so he can further his education.
Absolutely.
So he was here for about 6.5-7 years, and then he went back.
He's in Miami now.
Yes. And so is my daughter, my second oldest, Hyla. She's 20. And I know they get big so fast. Hey. So I know. I don't even want to hear about you guys. You have big people too. So
I know, but it's like, you know what I'm saying? I was like, okay, I know that we've known each other for about 20 years, but it really is factual when you look at the ages of the kids.
Because right.
I don't know why, for some reason, when I see on Facebook and I see those little ones, I don't know why I'm thinking it's the same little ones. But
I know. Yeah.
So where's Hyla?
She's also there with Q. She left about a year after him on the same education track. And so they're both right now attending Miami-Dade College.
Nice.
Yeah, doing really well, making their mother ever so proud of them.
Oh my God, so amazing.
Absolutely. So amazing.
And then did you have two little ones in Ethiopia?
My youngest was born here, but the three that came with me when I came back in 2011 were 11, 10, and 1 year old. And so my one-year-old is now 10 years old.
That's the one I keep saying. I don't know why he looks like Q-C-la so much to me.
Oh my gosh, I know. It's such like a repeat cycle for me to have another little boy and girl together growing up, like my older two, you know. That huge gap in the middle. So I have like a 10-year gap between my 20-year-old and my 10-year-old. That's the cycle right there. So that was a really interesting journey for me. Motherhood in Africa. Motherhood after repatriating.
Tell us, did you make this move as a single mom, or did you make this move with someone?
Well, I had a partner in theory. In theory, I was in a relationship. We made the decision to come, and it never really materialized. Him joining us never materialized.
Gotcha.
But we did start out with that intention.
Yeah.
And then, I don't know, people, you know, things change, you know what I mean? So, but for me, I think that Africa was always my path personally, irrespective of who was on the journey with me. And
Absolutely.
yeah, so at that time, I was just like, you know what? I get to choose my path. And Africa was for me, like, that was my, you know, that was like
That
my
was the
pinnacle.
goal.
That was my pinnacle. That was like that moment that I said, you know what? I can carve out my destiny. And so, irrespective of who wasn't able, willing, or even wanted to, you know, join me or join this, because it's kind of, it's like an adventure, you know, it's like, because you're going into this like
Absolutely.
vast unknown. There's this huge vast
All right.
unknown. And so going forward, from the time that I made the decision, you know, I just knew that there was no turning back for me. That was huge. And there's been attempts.
When was that moment where you realized, okay, this is where I'm going to be, this is where I'm going, and there is no turning back? When was that moment for you? Do you remember?
Oh my gosh. I think because I've been fantasizing about it for so long, like the fantasy of being in Africa was with me from a really young age. So I feel like I always knew I was never going back. But the moment when I was actually tested, right, was when my partner decided that he was. He was like, you know what? I think this is probably wasn't probably the right time for us. Why don't you come back and let's try again? And I was like, come back? Question mark, question mark, question mark.
You're like,
No, like I'm
no.
like, no, that's not an option for me, you know? And you know, because I, you know, I the time that it took for me to decide with all of like everything that I needed to have in, you know, available to me to make the decision in terms of like ticket money and like all of the little details that I worked towards, even liquidizing everything. It was just like a huge, it was a huge undertaking to come. So for me to
Of
have done all of
course.
that and then like the question of returning, it was like out of the question. You know what I mean?
That makes
It was out of
sense.
the question. I'd already
There's
done
no,
so much to be there. And it was something that I actually wanted for myself. So it wasn't like I was doing it for someone else and I was helping someone else about their dream. It was like this was actually my dream. So yeah, when someone was like, when they were like, oh, you know, or my partner, we're calling someone like he's not a person. So my ex-partner was like, you know, maybe we should, you know, just try again later on. I was like, well, you know, that's not an option for me. And I think that that was kind of like the demarcation, you know, like that was the moment of truth. And
I mean, just listening to, and you taking us back to those moments and what happened, because if we have the story correctly, here you are, a young woman living in Miami, Florida, and wanting this to be part of your life. Like, this is where I want to live, this is where I want to be, this is where I want my kids to obviously grow up at some point, you had to say to yourself. And when we think back to how young the kids are, making a decision like that, you know what I mean? Despite, support, like he's saying, hey, I'm not ready to do this. And you're like, no, we're going to put. I thought your story was so interesting because, I mean, and I want us to pause here for a second only because you say it so effortlessly. But there are women in situations, in circumstances that they could not even leave to another zip code. Far less for you to be able to lift yourself up out of whatever the circumstances were, to have the strength to push forward, to create a whole other life in a completely a different country, which, if I'm not mistaken, English is not their first
No, it's
language.
not.
So we're talking language barriers, we're talking food. I'm sure that there is not a McDonald's and a fast food joint around every corner. So I'm listening, and I know my listeners are like, wait, hold on, what? So when we talk about just strength, and we talk about a woman, and we talk about how important it is for us to be uplifted and represented in our community and to be acknowledged. And I think that's what this is all about for me with you, is to acknowledge that, hey, you did this. You did this, and you did this with minimal support and faced a whole lot of challenges and raised your children there, raising children there. And I mean, that has to be commended. That has to be commended. And I mean, if I never said it before, I'm completely ever so proud of you. Because what you have done, I believe, is you've paved the way for many women. And that's why I think that this podcast is so important, is because each and every one of us have something. We have that gift that we need to give to the world. And there has to be a platform in which these things can be a light shine upon those things. Because I think as we go through life and we're going through our challenges, we just feel like, oh, it's life. I'm just going through it. I'm just going to make it. I'm just going to figure it out. I'm just going to make it work. But we don't realize, like, you're basically a trailblazer. You're a trailblazer because there are women right now. And just in general, I mean, I keep saying women because this month is all about women appreciation, acknowledgement, but people, and they just, you don't understand because they're just stuck. They can't move. And that's when I was talking yesterday, just about frequency and vibration. And you said it a second ago, which is, this was something you were fantasizing about for a very long time. So you have already been there mentally, emotionally, spiritually. It's just that physically, that was the last step
right.
in this chapter for you. But you were already there. And so, I mean, that highlights everything that I've been talking about, which is the power of the mind. Mm. And so, you know, you have to be careful of the things that you say, true. Things that come out of your mouth. You have to be careful of the things that you meditate on a daily basis, because that essentially is your life. And it may not transform right then and there, but a year, 2 years, 5 years, 10 years down the road. Look how quickly that time has flew by. And that idea has materialized itself. And now you are actually, if we can say, you are actually your dream. Because this is what you
fully full with all, like, without holding it back anything. This is my destiny. Like, I feel it in my soul, all the way deep down in my core, that, you know, like, I was blessed to be on this path. And I thank you so much for the words that you say. They really touched me so much. I almost cried while you were talking. I was like, oh my God, you know, because I don't, you know, you never really stop to give yourself that type of credit. You know what I mean? Like, I've never really stopped to say, oh, Janelle, you're so brave. Yeah. Or Janelle, you're so much, you have so much courage. Wow. You know, like, I'm just living my life like every person does. Like, I get up in the morning, you know, I do my little routine. I make my children breakfast. I sweep, I mop, I live a normal life. Yeah. I just happen to be living a normal life across the globe. I live a normal life.
Which is not where you started.
It's not where I started.
It's not where you were born. It's not even in your background. You know what I mean? As far as culture. I know that there was a period in time when we were all together and we were all having these conversations. But when the reality hit and it was like, okay, hold on a second. You're not born and raised in Ethiopia. Like, she didn't say she went to a great grandmother who lived there and was born there and she's going back home. No. Her family is in the United States and roots are in Jamaica. And so this is huge. This is huge to be able to do that, because there's some of us within that organization and that understanding that we came from when we were studying. It's like, well, we're waiting for the repatriation money to do this. So, you know, we'll do this once we have the money to do this. But what you have shown us is like, no, if you're going to do it, you just need, you're going to have to get up and get it done. Like, no one's coming to save you. There's not going to be the Black Starliner coming to pick you guys up and bring you guys.
No, this is not going to
happen. You know what I mean? Like, you literally have to get up, get in the mindset, get ready, and be prepared, even when the challenges face you. So anyway, we're on a break right now. So we are going to take a quick break, and then we will be back. Keep tuning in. All right. You to The Humanity Effect. I am your speaker and host, Dishami. Thank you so much for tuning in. So right before the break, we are talking with Janelle, who is currently living in Ethiopia or Ethiopia. I was talking to one guy the other night and that's what he said. And this is a really interesting subject because it involves moving from one hemisphere to the next with children, you know, in what would have been a partnership, but things changed and she still pressed on and currently resides there. So what a lot of our listeners is really, really wondering, I know I'm not the only one, but it's like, what? So you mentioned one of the challenges, which was you started this journey, you know, with a partnership thinking, okay, we're going to do it together. And I mean, for those of us that are single moms or single parent, or you understand if you have two adults, you know, and we're working at a plan and we're doing something together, it's a lot different than if you're doing this by yourself. And so the challenges that come with that in itself, you know, is a lot. So tell us just a little bit about what are the other challenges did you face, or maybe not, just what about the language barrier, what about just you know, work, like employment, things like that? What are some of the other things you faced and how did you overcome it?
Ooh, okay, well, like I said, I've been here 9 years, so let's see how I can condense all of that. Well, definitely, I think it was a culture shock. At the beginning, so? Definitely, mostly that. And then, of course, language barrier. I think Ethiopia is like this insular country that has not been affected by colonialism. It hasn't been colonized. And so they have like this kind of very pure, almost innocence that a Westerner doesn't really comprehend coming in right away. And so there are a lot of things that just don't seem like right, you know, like we're just not, it takes time to assimilate to understanding people's social differences and like their social packs and the way that they interact with one another is so unique and very, so unique, so much so that from the outside looking in, trying to pierce the culture, it can take a lot of time because there are many layers, there are intricacies to the dynamic of how the people interact with each other that we get coming right in, right?
Wow.
Yeah, so that was, so you know, I think for me, that was probably the thing.
Our mind is blown, sorry. Like, I know you're gonna have to go a little bit deeper because things you don't think about.
I mean, there's so many layers though. They're definitely, listen, let me tell you something. Every single day is like a new day. It's like the groundhog. You know the ground, you know that movie Groundhog Day?
Yeah.
Every day is like that. You know what I'm saying? It's almost like every day is like the first day. It's because there's so much richness, there's so much depth to, because like I'm coming to an African culture, so it's more than just being an expat. It's almost like reconnecting to a broken part, right? So then I came to Africa thinking that I was coming into like just the experience of being in Africa, not really understanding the impression or the impact Africa would have on me as a person.
Wow.
Yeah, so that Africa itself has kind of made me a different person. I'm not the same person I was when I left. And not only because of maturity, because there's maturity that comes, there's time that passes, and with that you evolve as an individual. I would not have been this person were I not here, right? So I owe a lot of like my evolution into this person that I am right now, that I'm very comfortable with, that I'm very proud of, that I feel, you know, like has a lot to offer the world. I am that person because of Ethiopia. it's really deep. It's had such a life transforming impact on my life. Like, it's just like I've been like totally transformed by this place, and I'm that thankful for it in such a deep way, like the gratitude that I have. But it wasn't always so. Like, I remember in my early years being super frustrated, being like, you know, not really understanding what's happening, like not getting it, you know, like something wasn't sinking for me. And, but I think like at some point, I think maybe 4 years in, 5 years in, I started realizing that there was just, I wasn't, because I wasn't aware that I didn't know them. And I'm going to tell you this one.
Give us some examples.
I'm going to tell you right now, girl. I'm going to tell you because it's so interesting.
We're like at the edge of our seats. We're like, what?
I know. Sit at the edge. At the edge. Everybody's like, oh, what is it? Okay. So I made friends with an Ethiopian young lady. She's about 10 years younger than me. My bridge, right? She's my bridge into Ethiopian culture, which I really feel like wherever you decide, if you ever decide to become an expat, if you ever decide to live abroad, find someone who can become your social. They can help you understand what you're seeing, understand how the people are thinking, understand what these things mean, because you might see something and you just don't understand it because you have no point of reference. There's no precedence in your life for it. So everything's kind of like this blank observation, almost like you're a baby again. You know, you just don't quite get it, right?
Right.
So I have this friend, I made this friend, and her and I were talking one day. And when I tell you this conversation changed my life, okay, so we were talking about an inner consciousness, right? So in Ethiopian culture, you know that at night when we're sleeping on our beds and we're like relaxed and, you know, the voice, it's like there's an inner voice or something that's guiding us or something that's teaching us or something that's like in communication with us, kind of like giving us a sense of where to go and who to be and what to think. Well, in Ethiopian culture, they have a name for that thing. They have a name for that inner voice. So I was sitting there on the bed, this conversation about our inner consciousness and how, like in Ethiopian culture, the name that they have given that inner consciousness is Helena. So when she was talking to me, she was like, yes, and your Helena will... I'm like, my what? She was like, you're Helena, your inner, that inner voice inside that bothers you when you're not doing the right thing or something isn't sitting right with you. There's an inner voice. But what really stuck, because at that exact moment, I started to cry. And the reason why I started to cry was because that was a piece of knowledge that had been disconnected from my whole social consciousness that was restored at that exact moment. She restored a broken consciousness in me. And that the entire society, I could talk to a 7-year-old child in Ethiopia. Wow. And if I say Helena, they know what I'm talking about. So it's not like some esoteric knowledge. Deep communal knowledge that's like tooth fairy to us. You know how we talk about the tooth fairy and everybody's like, everybody knows what the tooth fairy is, right? In the West, right? Helena is that in Ethiopian culture. That consciousness, that unbroken, everyone understands and knows. So, and this is something that I know what I was missing until I got it back. And when I got it back, when I was able to retrieve that,
how is it spelled?
Helena, Helina. Helina. Helena.
Okay.
I always said that if I have another daughter, I'm going to name her that because all my daughters have H names. So it's such a dynamic, the experience is so dynamic
at that moment it's where it was like, boom.
Yes.
I mean, I know we're all thinking, yes, dang, can I push out another baby? Because here's her name. But then again, I mean, that might be a business call.
Yes. So,
mm-hmm. Tip number one, because we were going to go right into that. We were going to go right into it, which is if you guys are thinking of making a move, and I mean, it could be, you know, it could be to Ethiopia, it could be to Ireland, because you might be saying, well, here's where my ancestry is. It could be ICE. It could be anywhere that you're thinking of making this move to. But that tip that you said, I mean, is important. It's that social bridge. Like, you need to make a friend, a local friend, someone that understands the culture, somebody
right.
that's basically
Absolutely.
Willing
Absolutely.
To take your hand and yep. guide you along. I love that. I love that. Okay. Mm-hmm. So we were talking about, we're mixing it in with the challenges that you faced and how you overcome it. And you said you knew that you had to penetrate this culture, and you could tell from on the surface that it was not going to be just something as easy to do.
Yes.
That you had to get in there.
And when I did, it was like the floodgates opened up. It was like every...
What about the...
Well, they depending on who you ask, everybody has their own kind of, you know, perspective, let's say, right? So my older son, he was a little bit more resistant. He was a little bit older, and we moved into a semi-rural community about after our first 7 months in the city. I wanted to move to a community called Shashamani.
Right.
And it was at the time, it was a budding, like, but it was like or semi-rural. So it was urbanizing, but it was still very much a rural community. So he kind of had a hard time because he was used to a faster pace. Mm-hmm. And just the lifestyle in general was just dramatically different.
Right.
And then I think also being the man of the house, like, he was the oldest male. And he kind of, mm-hmm. I think he felt the pressure of having to protect us as well, you know, so there was a lot of that. And so I think his experience in Shashamani kind of shaped his outlook of Ethiopia in general. And when we came back to Addis, they liked socializing with the young people here. Right.
Right.
So I think as they got older, because they were preteens when we came, mm-hmm. and then they became teenagers. And then they stayed until they were like late teens.
Right.
And so it was all of that kind of like socializing with, you know, their peers and, you know, adjusting to life. But what I will say is that when they got back to the States on several occasions, not only once, my son has said, I'm so glad that you didn't raise us here. And I'm happy with where you raised us. Mm. I'm glad that you raised us the way you did. And I'm glad that you took us to Africa. Like, he thanked me. And I was happy
that
to hear that.
That melts my heart.
It was so touching to me as well. But I think mostly because he sees what he missed out on. And I also, like, I was really protective of them growing up, and I really wanted to shelter them from a lot of the things that I felt like I was exposed to too early as a young person. And
like what? Can you give us three things that you wanted to shelter them from living here in America? What
oh gosh, over-sexualization,
things?
Over-sexualization is for, you know, it's too much sexualization, I think, for the young mm-hmm. people. Mm-hmm. Definitely, you know, peer pressure in terms of like drug abuse. Mm-hmm. Just, you know, acting out, those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. And just, you know, I think just general societal angst in America.
Yeah.
You know, they're just not, America's just not a cohesive place. It's not a family oriented place.
Oh my God. And you know what? What's so crazy? I was talking to someone right before, a colleague of mine, right before we got on this podcast. And I was telling him, you know, what my upcoming podcast was going to be about. And, you know, he talked about, you know, he has definitely a political view. And so he was coming from, well, you know, in the beginning, America was supposed to be this melting pot of cultures, and you have the Asians and you have the, you know, the Caribbeans, and then you have the Mexicans, and it was just one big melting pot. And I'm like, you said, no, it's not a big melting pot. It absolutely is not. you know, like it would be great if that's what it was. But in reality, like you said, has their little thing against the other culture. I mean, just recently, and I don't know if you keep up with the news here, but a salon, like a couple spas in Atlanta, Georgia, somebody just went in there, hate crime, a whole bunch of people. And so the Asian community there is saying, wow, now there's crimes against Asians, you know? So I'm glad that you highlighted that. So those were the things that you sheltered them from. And, you know, personally, I grew up in Trinidad. I was born in New York, but I grew up in Trinidad. And so all the way up to high school, so I didn't understand anything, the fabric of American culture until I came and was living as an adult. And I was in shock. I think I was in a tailspin, so to speak. I didn't understand it. You know, now I understand certain things, but you're absolutely right in, you know, over-sexualization, such peer pressure. It's such a, you know, a lot of consumerism. And so to have a child, that's why a lot of my segments were previously on just the social media aspect and how it's shaping our girls, that they think that they have to look like these images that they see. And this is not true. This is not what womanhood is about. It's not about this, but that's what they see. So this is what is influencing and shaping their minds. And it's actually scary when you think about it. So let's get back to the children had their challenges. Just any teenager really going through those changes, especially being in a different culture. But then tell us, you know, you talked about the language. I think you were going into the language before I had cut you off prior. So tell us a little bit about the language barrier, because that's a big one for anybody moving.
I'm back.
All right. Well, welcome back.
Yeah. Yay.
So we'll just dive right in. And so we left off the conversation where we were just talking about just, you know, the transition from one country to another, the language barrier, there's a social aspect. And you were going to share with us, so far we had one tip, and you were going to share with us, besides the social bridge, making a local friend, what other challenges you faced, and tell us, you know, how might we overcome?
Well, I think most of my challenges, and it's a great point that you make to even bring up, you know, the issues people would face. I think most of my issues centered around crises of faith. Mm-hmm. And I think that I can't get into some of the practical bits without focusing on the issues that deal with mostly how do people handle the unknown. Mm-hmm. And people have different types of temperaments, right? So you have people who are very like rigid, and they really need to plan everything down to the most minute details. And if that's the type of person you are, when you come here, you're going to be stretched so thin, because that just can't happen in every instance, right?
Of course.
So a lot of the things that were centered, like the things that I planned to do when I came, all those ideas, I had to scrap those ideas. Wow. I had to kind of, you know, learn the landscape in mm-hmm. order to really figure out how I fit in. So it's almost like a in the moment, impromptu, you know, I feel like I've been living in improv, you know, the last 9 years of my life. But not in a way that I resent. I think in a way that I'm kind of like enamored with, mm-hmm. because it makes me have to rely on more of a spiritual sentiment, more of like a spiritual compass, mm-hmm. than like my physical desire to know all of the details and to know all of the outcomes and to, you know, feasibility studies and all that stuff. To me, doesn't really like play a role in my life anymore. I feel like I'm more on like a journey of faith. And I think that the challenge I would say to point out to anyone who's considering making this type of journey is to be flexible. Like the challenges mm-hmm. that we have in how we have come out of the cookie cutter mold of life, and everything's very instant and everything's very predictable and everything's very kind of, you know, plan worthy. Like, you can make a conscientious effort outside of, you know, crises and, like, you know, most of the things you can basically plan out, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas when you come to a whole place, like, you're a whole new reality. It's not just, you know, it's not just you in this kind of bubble. It's kind of you having to stretch outside of your comfort zone.
Right.
And so in order to do that, you kind of have to lean on a more spiritual, you know, ideology maybe, or as a way that you kind of look at life.
Right.
Patience, I think, is a huge part of it. You know, faith is a huge part of it. Tolerance is a huge part of it. You know, it's like, how does your character yield to new experiences? You know, how do you bend? How do you expand inside? Not just, you know, on the surface, but on your innermost parts. Like, how do you reform yourself to new experiences? And then being able to go through those experiences a better person on the other side. I think that is kind of like the challenge. The challenge is, you know, keep evolving, becoming a better person through challenges that you inevitably will face.
Right.
That is.
Right.
Yeah.
So again, it comes back to your mindset and, you know, like basically in yoga, you know, back to center, you know, you back to that core, and, you know, you're going to be tested. You're going to be tested and, you know, but just have that flexibility. You know, it's going to be, I mean, it's new. Everything's going to be new. You're going to be learning, like you said, you're learning every day. You're learning something new that you didn't realize, just because, especially where you are, there's so many different layers to that particular culture as well. So we'll keep talking, and we're going to go ahead and we're going to wrap up a bit. So what projects are you currently working on? I know that you've been there for, you know, quite some years. And so what projects are you working on that you would like to share?
Well, I'm currently self-published my first book back in September of 2019. And it's a 6-part community cookbook series called Shashamani Vegan. Okay. It can be best described as a plant-based guide to African repatriation. And basically tells the story of a community of resettlers. So, like, my story is not very unique. It's unique, I guess, in my own community where I'm coming from. But when I came here, there's like a vast and growing community of repatriated individuals from all over the world. So what we did was we had interviews with members of the community, and we selected plant-based recipes. Everyone submitted, and we basically kind of wove a tale about the community using history, using cultural nuances, using colloquial language, just, you know, all the little tidbits of information that we kind of gathered in our journey that we would have loved before we made it, we put into this 6-part community cookbook series. And so so far we've released 4 volumes. Thank you.
Okay.
So we've released 4 volumes so far. The first volume was fruits, the volume was vegetables, the third volume was seeds and grains, and this most recent volume, which was released on March the 2nd, is pulses and proteins. And so we have 2 remaining volumes. The next volume will be released on May the 25th. And the last volume will be released on July the 23rd.
Oh my goodness. I love it. So where can they find, like, how do you get a copy?
Okay, well, at the moment, it's available as a digital ebook on Amazon Kindle. And if you are interested, you could always visit us at www.shashamanivegan.com. That's S-H-A-S-H-E-M-E-N-E vegan.com. And you can also
Okay.
find us on Facebook by the same name. So Shashamani is a town in Ethiopia that is historic for having been the location of land that was His Imperial Majesty Emperor Haile Selassie gave as a gift to
All
Black
right.
people of the world after the
Oh.
Italian invasion in 1935, and they occupied Ethiopia until 1941. During that time, the Ethiopian World Federation was formed, which was providing assistance to Ethiopia. And as a show of gratitude, His Majesty donated this land or gifted this land to the Black people for resettlement. And so that town has a real historic precedence and like significance to anyone who's interested in the story of Penn, anyone who's interested in the story of the, you know, right of return to Africa. I think really Shashamani is kind of like at the core of that conversation. And so we wanted to highlight the history of the whole experience of the community and the resettlers that have come and have been relocating there since 1955. So that is the reason why we titled it Shashamani Vegan. And I hope your listeners will at least take some time to go over to our website, check it out, and hopefully purchase a book and learn more about us.
Absolutely, absolutely. So I like the fact that you highlighted Shashamani and just the history, because I don't think that a lot of, you know, a lot of people are aware of that, that there is land available for those wanting to repatriate. If someone was interested in that process, how would they go about that? How advise them to go about that?
Well, honestly, the land grant is no longer being officiated over. At 1975, right, where His Majesty was ousted by the Derg, which is the communist regime that came into power and was in power from 1975 until 1992. During that time, they nationalized all the land. And so the Shashamani land grant was also nationalized at that time. So there's no way for a person, now people can't own land in Ethiopia. That's not a law. So most of the people who do resettle purchase a small piece and build up a piece of property on the land. And through that property, they're able to retain ownership of that property. So at this time, I would not advise anyone come.
Oh, I think we time out again. No, she's still connected. Are you still there? I'm not sure if she's still there, but so basically what she's saying, just to recap, is that this land was available, Shashamani. And so Shashamani has its history. If you have time to take a look at that. But I mean, I just want to say in closing, because I don't know if she's going to come back in or what's going on, but there is a world of opportunity out there. And so
hello.
Hey, hello. Welcome back.
Back again.
We're gonna have a
so I want to apologize to your audience. Just let everybody know that I am in Africa and this is such a reality. The calling and the dropping and the calling.
Yeah.
So I mean, please. Yeah.
This is unscripted. So we understand. And that's why I said it several times that you are actually calling, connecting this call through Ethiopia. So we're going to have these things. But, you know, in closing, thank you so much for sharing your story.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Being able to tell my story.
Being able to tell your story. And I think that for those of us listening, that it doesn't matter where you are in life, if you have a dream, that your dream can one day become a reality. And you have to have that flexibility, like she said. If you're planning on living abroad, like, forget everything that you're used to, and be open-minded and be willing to take on the new, be willing to learn. And in doing so, you know, something so great that you said is that it has taught you, you know, Ethiopia has taught you something about yourself. And I think that's all a part of the journey of growth. You know, like I always say, that we are spiritual beings having a human experience, but we're not just physical human beings. We're more than that. And so if you're able to close your eyes and to step outside of your comfort zone, you will find growth. You'll find so many things about yourself that you didn't even realize. That's the beauty of it. So also, you mentioned that your book once again, Vegan Eats, and just where they can find the book. If you can mention that one more time for us.
Definitely. For sure. Thank you for reminding me to do that again, because definitely I want other people to understand that, you know, when you're coming into place, not necessarily just Ethiopia, but also in a new place, like, there's a lot of history too, you know, and to really understand the place where you are, it's really important to understand the history of the place where you are, because then even within the history, you can understand more of the people, the current climate, how the people respond to each other, what's, you know, because Ethiopia's history is so deep. But look at, you know, what was going on right now in our community in the Tigray region. Like, if you would come into these communities and you don't really understand the history, all of these things are kind of like shocks, you know, like, what's going on? What's happening? Like, why is this happening? These are deep histories. They go back really far. So to, you know, learn your history, learn the history of the places where you're going to live, like, understand the people, the culture, the community, those things are really important. And one of the reasons why we wrote Shashamani Vegan is so that we could tell the story, the history of the community of repatriation, how our communities got connected with the Ethiopian community all those many years ago. You know, those things are important, you know, for us to recall and also to remind people about. So we talk about that at length in our book, in our cookbook, Shashamani Vegan. We tell the stories of a repatriated community. And this book can be found at www.shashamanivegan.com, which is spelled S-H-A-S-H-E-M-E-N-E-V-E-G-A-N. So if you visit our website, you can purchase our volumes. You can learn a little bit more about our project. And, you know, I hope that people just enjoy the recipes and the stories. I think at the end of the day, putting it in a practical cookbook is the way that we got people to.
Absolutely, because food is such a staple in all of communities around the world. You know, a lot of center around food. So that was really clever. So I'm not sure, we may have lost her. The connection kind of dropped in and out, but it has been such a eye-opening podcast. Like I said, I appreciate her for opening up and sharing her journey with us. Hopefully someone out there, that this has inspired you. What is the journey that you're on in your life, that something that you've been dreaming about doing? This has been your dream, and you know, it's time for you to just step in to that reality and make it a reality. But be mindful that everything is not always going to work out the exact same way that you want it to work out. but it doesn't mean that it's not working for you. And so we're going to go ahead and wrap up. Again, you've been tuned into The Humanity Effect. I am your speaker and host, Isha Marie. Thank you so much for tuning in. Hit us up on IG. It's the_humanity_effect. Until then, be safe. I love you. Be at peace. Talk to you soon.